FabLab Podcast, Episode 17, Blue Ocean Strategy and the Direct-to-Consumer Business Model.
Welcome to the FabLab Podcast, brought to you by FabricatorsFriend.com. If you own or manage a stone shop and would like to reduce your frustration while increasing your profits, you've come to the right place. As the owner of a prominent Pacific Northwest stone shop with over two decades of experience and the author of the book Less Chaos, More Cash, our host knows more than just a little bit about the challenges of owning and operating a shop. You'll hear down-to-earth, real-life solutions you can implement today to calm your shop operation and generate more profit. Thanks for joining us, and here's our host, Aaron Crowley.
Welcome back to the FabLab Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Crowley. The FabLab Podcast is brought to you, sponsored by, made possible by FabricatorsFriend.com, and I'm so glad that you joined me today on this episode following the 4th of July weekend. I hope you had an opportunity to get away for a few extra days, take some time away from customers, employees, equipment, countertops, everything related to this industry and this profession that we have chosen for ourselves. It is really important to take a break now and then to give our minds and our bodies, our souls, an opportunity to relax, to rest, to recover, to have the opportunity to just be fresh so that we can imagine and consider new opportunities, new alternatives perhaps to the work that we do when we return. And so now that we're back to work, now that we're back at the grind of fabricating and installing granite and quartz countertops, I hope you're ready to pick it back up because we got a great episode today. Subject is interesting. A subject that is very close to my heart. Something I have been focused on and wanting to touch on for a long time now. And so today we're going to talk about the Blue Ocean Strategy and the direct-to-consumer model. But before we get to that, I want to recommend that you visit FabricatorsFriend.com. As I mentioned in the last three or four episodes, July 4th was the day that we launched our video series, our sales seminar called Radical Retail Sales. It is a short but powerful three-video series, and you can access it by visiting FabricatorsFriend.com. Go to the homepage, look at the top right-hand side of that page. You'll see a blue button that says Sales Seminar. Click the button, fill out the form. We'll email you the link to those three videos. They are tremendous. Tremendous. Really, it's the sum total of about 20 years of my retail sales work condensed into about 15 minutes of sales training. So I hope you'll check that out. And now it's time to check out the subject of today's podcast. We're going to look at the Blue Ocean Strategy and the direct-to-consumer model. Now, the Blue Ocean Strategy is a strategy, but it's the title of a book as well, written in the early 2000s. It was a book that really did a case study on a couple of companies, but one in particular, the Yellowtail Wine Company out of Australia. And this story that they tell out of this case study is so instructive. There are so many parallels between the wine industry in the early 2000s and I believe the granite and quartz countertop industry today. And that story holds a lot of value and relevance for us today as we seek opportunities to continue to thrive in our businesses and to continue to be profitable. So instead of doing a book report of sorts where we spend the entire episode on the book, we're simply going to look at that at the beginning to kind of set the stage for the rest of this episode as we consider the state of our own industry, and then we consider what opportunities may exist for us that we haven't considered before. So let's start with the Blue Ocean Strategy. What is the Blue Ocean Strategy? Well, really, you have to tell the story of the wine industry, the late 90s and early 2000s. The wine industry was huge. It was growing. There was just tremendous demand. It had really become a trend, if you will, across the world. And so there was just an enormous appetite for high-quality wines. The problem was the industry was dominated by a number of gigantic wine producers, manufacturers, if you will. And there were hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of other wine companies or wineries, wine brands, trying to break in to the wine market. The problem was that those giant companies more or less owned about 80% of the market, and the other hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of wine companies were fighting over the remaining, 20%. So what was happening? Everybody was cutting prices to try and gain market share. And so that's where the contrast to the blue ocean comes in. It really was a red ocean. It was a gigantic industry, yet nobody in that industry was making money. And I'm generalizing there, I'm paraphrasing, but there wasn't tremendous profitability. There was not tremendous prosperity. There weren't wildly profitable wine companies at that time. What you had was a red ocean made red by all the red ink of all of these companies, just cutthroat business tactics, cutting prices and essentially slashing each other to death to the point where everybody was bleeding red ink into the ocean, turning it red. So they set the stage that that was the state of the wine industry in the late 90s and early 2000s. And a company from Australia completely turned the market on its head. In a sense, they didn't change the market at all. What they did was they went and found a blue ocean. Here was a company making good quality wines in Australia, and yet they said, we don't want to continue to operate in this red ocean. There's no money to be made. Everybody is slashing prices to try and gain market share, and nobody is thriving. Nobody is prospering. And so they made this massive pivot. They looked at the market. They considered the marketplace. They defined who it was that was buying wine, and they said, you know what? We're never going to be successful selling to the same market that everybody else is selling to. So they created a strategy, the Blue Ocean strategy. They went outside of the traditional wine drinker market, the traditional profile, if you will, and they created an entirely new market for wine that was attainable, approachable, as opposed to the impression that a lot of beer drinkers had that wine drinking was kind of snobbish. You really had to know your stuff to walk into a store and select a wine. And so they found that a lot of people avoided it. Even though they liked wine, there was this sense that they weren't qualified to buy it. And so they didn't. They drank beer or wine coolers. And so Yellowtail Wines did the research, they realized what was happening in the marketplace, and they went out and they targeted this other segment of the market that wanted to drink wine but wasn't. And they did that by making their wine attainable, approachable. They lowered that threshold, if you will, that barrier that, you know, you've got to have this knowledge base to successfully go and shop for wines and that sort of snobbish attitude that existed or pervaded that industry. They went kind of at the other end of the market and they targeted wine cooler drinkers and beer drinkers and made quality wine available and attainable to those folks. And they created literally a brand new market for their wine. And they just absolutely killed it. They crushed it. So that's where the blue ocean comes in. They left the red ocean of that fierce competition fighting over that segment of the marketplace, and they went and created their own market. So that's really the extent to which I wanted to touch on that book and that idea, this blue ocean strategy. It's really a way to transition into a different way of thinking, because I think the industry, the granite and quartz countertop industry, is beginning to mirror the wine industry of the late 90s and the early 2000s, and that it's very similar. You've got a number of giant companies in every market that are pursuing the dealer slash wholesale slash big box store market. They probably own the vast majority of the market share in terms of countertops that are installed in retail homes. And then you've got a whole bunch of small to mid-sized companies fighting over what's left. And I don't think anybody is really thriving as a general rule. There's just fierce competition. There is this downward pricing pressure to get the jobs done less expensively, to increase volume. It's a red ocean. I'm telling you, the parallels are uncanny, in my opinion, in my estimation, as I observe the marketplace, at least locally in the Northwest, the very same thing is happening. And so the question is there an opportunity to thrive? Is there an opportunity to create or to find alternative markets within the marketplace that enable us to leave that red ocean behind, find new blue oceans where prosperity, abundance, reasonable profitability is still possible? And I believe the answer to that question is yes. And so really the second phase or the second component of this podcast today, talking about thinking unconventionally, thinking outside of the current model, is what we have to do if we're going to find a blue ocean to run our companies within so that we can prosper and thrive and profit. We've got to start thinking differently than the rest of the industry. So let me set the stage for the rest of this episode. So we've talked about the blue ocean strategy conceptually. We're going to use that as sort of our baseline to pivot from and to acknowledge we've got to start thinking differently. And then from there, we got to consider what are the other markets that may exist currently that we can pursue. And so we talked about the yellowtail wine. We talked about the blue ocean strategy. Now we're going to talk about thinking unconventionally. And if we're going to think unconventionally, we've got to consider what the conventional wisdom is right now. And I believe that by and large, you can describe the current state of the granite and quartz countertop industry by calling it the broker model or the dealer model. That is to say that a tremendous percentage of the countertop fabrication and installation that is done today for retail homeowners is done through brokers. Companies like flooring stores and big box stores, cabinet shops and contractors, there's an intermediary. There is a broker, somebody who is getting that countertop project priced at the wholesale level, who is then turning around, marking it up to retail, and then selling it to the end user. That broker model dominates our industry right now. And you can kind of break it up amongst those big players and then the small to mid-sized companies that are all pursuing that same model. There's three problems, though, with the broker model. And I think this is why it parallels the wine industry so well. The competition is just absolutely fierce. And let me ask you something. Is the price increasing or going down? Generally, there is enormous pressure to keep those prices down, and it artificially depresses the true cost and what the true retail price of granite and quartz countertops should be. And so it's extremely low margin. Everybody's cutting everybody else. It's cutthroat, and everybody's bleeding while they do their best to lower the price to get that volume business from those brokers, those dealers. And so that's the first problem. Low margin. Low margin? Very, 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 very few companies can become really, really profitable doing low margin work. Now, it always seems tantalizingly possible or likely to make up the difference by high volume, but high volume equals high risk and high frustration, and it rarely translates into high profitability. So you've got this low margin reality that the vast majority of the fabricators in this industry are subjected to in this broker model. The second problem with that is it's volatile. If you step back and observe, that work changes hands frequently. I don't know if constantly is an adequate or accurate statement, but it's frequently. My observations in the Northwest, the big, big, big brokers, the big box stores, the Lowe's, the Home Depots, the Costco's, the big dealers, the flooring stores that are doing all the builder work, the companies that supply them granite and quartz countertops, that work changes hands on an ongoing basis. And so to build a business around a highly volatile customer base that is price-driven, where those dealers, those brokers, they grow their profits by getting the price down, not by increasing the price to the end user. So there's this tremendous pressure. And so there is a long line. There's a line of people out the door and down the street who want to do that dealer or broker work. And so it's volatile. The third problem with the broker model is that the manufacturer is disconnected from the end user. Because there's a dealer in between, the dealer or the broker has the relationship with the consumer, the end user of the product. And so that information, that communication flow that is so necessary for manufacturers to hear from the marketplace, to understand what the market is looking for, is interested in, how they're responding, that stops at the dealer. The dealer becomes the fabricator's customer, and the dealer has tremendous influence, even though they're not the end user of the product. And so when you break that communication flow, that information flow, the manufacturer is at a disadvantage. And that brings me to our third point, which really is the advantage, the opportunity for the stone fabricator to break out of this sort of conventional wisdom and to see an unconventional opportunity in the marketplace that exists, that gives them that direct connection to the end user, to the consumer, the person who's actually buying and using the granite countertops. And that's our third point today, the direct-to-consumer model. Now, it's very interesting how this wine theme really comes full circle as it relates to this conversation that we're having today about thinking unconventionally and the direct-to-consumer model. Because a friend of mine, an advisor of mine, he's really a paid consultant, but he's also a friend. I consider him a mentor. He's a very wise man. He's a principal, founder, founding member of Pilot Wealth Management. They advise large multi-generational companies who are in the process of handing over their businesses to the next generation. In a lot of ways, in a lot of cases, it's the children of the founders who are now taking over these large enterprises. Him and I were having a conversation about this very subject. Interestingly enough, he advises a couple of wineries. And guess what he told me? So he's very familiar with the wine industry because he's advising these large wineries. The only companies right now that are really making serious money in the wine industry are companies who have figured out the direct consumer model. The wineries who are setting up their sales to sell directly to the end user, the wine consumer, the person who actually puts the bottle on the shelf, uncorks it, and drinks it. They are creating these programs where they're selling cases of wine directly to the consumer. They are completely circumventing, completely avoiding the traditional distribution model where the distributor is taking, 35-40% of the retail price. They're going around that. They're charging full retail, and they're thriving. These are becoming established, profitable enterprises. But more important than the profitability, or at least equally important to the profitability, now these wineries have a direct communication line with the end user. They are able to respond, to get feedback, to deal directly with their customer. They are able, they are able to build relationships with their customer. And the power of that is not to be underestimated. It is tremendous. And so that's what we're going to talk about now, the opportunity, this unconventional thought in the stone industry, that instead of pursuing business at the wholesale level where the dealer calls all the shots, the dealer pits all of these companies lining up out the door to do their work against each other to drive the price down even lower and then turn around and add 35% markup to the retail homeowner, instead of pursuing that, I think we ought to consider the direct-to-consumer model as well, where the fabricator sells directly to the end user, the consumer, the retail homeowner, who ultimately is going to buy that countertop anyway. I believe that is the blue ocean opportunity for many fabricators in our industry today who have gotten used to the bloodbath that is competing for that dealer or broker work. I like to call that broker model the broken model. And I think a better model is the direct-to-consumer model. So today, my goal is not to, in a sense, convince anybody that that is what they should do. It is merely to propose it, to suggest it, to put it out there on the table for consideration. Because clearly, as an industry, I don't think the broker or the dealer model is working for the average fabricator. I think it's working great for the average slab supplier or manufacturer. I think it's working great for the average dealer. I would say it's working okay for the consumer, but I believe it's time for the industry to consider the direct-to-consumer model. This would connect the end user. I believe they would get a better finished product. And they'd get a better finished product for two reasons. One, because they would be communicating directly with the fabricator, and two, because the fabricator would be charging and getting full retail price, they would finally have the sufficient resources to fabricate and install and service that work effectively, as opposed to trying to do it at or below cost. And so that's why I think the direct-to-consumer model is very unconventional, but very worthy of serious consideration. Now, a couple of case studies, if you will. Michael Dell of Dell Computers in the late 90s, early 2000s, absolutely created havoc in the personal computer market by selling direct. Everybody said it couldn't be done. Everybody said it couldn't be done online, and he proved them all wrong and built an unbelievably powerful brand and an unbelievably loyal customer base while doing so. Right now, we see this taking off. It is happening everywhere. With the advent of the internet, the ability for manufacturers to connect directly with the end user is happening everywhere. And in one area in particular, I am observing. I've been a keen observer of this, and so I'm paying attention and I'm watching. You've got mattress manufacturers now that are selling direct. There's no middleman. There's no wholesaler. There's no delivery guy at the store anymore. You've got the Purple Mattress Company. You've got the Casper Mattress Company. These mattress manufacturers are selling direct. You've also got pillow manufacturers now that are advertising and selling direct. MyPillow being the most prominent and most obvious example of that. In addition, a recent entry into the marketplace is Boll & Branch Sheets. Yet another high-end manufacturer of a fantastic product that has chosen to disrupt the old model of selling through traditional retailers, and they are selling their products direct to the consumer, and they're thriving. The customer is getting a fantastic product. They're able to build a relationship with the company that developed it, and the company is able to thrive. It's so exciting. And it's so exciting to me because I believe that's where that blue ocean opportunity, at least a blue ocean opportunity, exists for fabricators right now. And for the fabricators who are willing to consider dealing directly with the retail homeowner as opposed to working through a dealer or broker, tremendous opportunity to build relationships, to communicate effectively, and to profit from that work exists. And so that's the other reason why we put that 3-video series together on our website, is because I really do believe that is where the future lies for prospering in the stone industry. So if you have found this information today intriguing or interesting, or you'd like to explore it further, or you'd like to think, well, how would I possibly sell direct? How would I develop those retail sales? That's why we developed the Radical Retail Sales Seminar and made it available on fabricatorsfriend.com. So stay tuned. We're going to continue to deal with this subject. Next episode, we're going to talk about dealer danger, kind of another facet of this whole business model that our industry is sort of caught up in right now, and some things to really think about if that's the work that you're doing, maybe some things to consider as you move forward. And so thanks again for joining me on the Fab Lab podcast. As always, I consider it a tremendous opportunity, a tremendous privilege to be with you and to develop a relationship with you as well. And so thank you. And until next time, happy fabricating.